Spokane. You're listening to Praxis on KYRS Thin Air Community Radio. My name's Taylor. I'm your host. And today, in honor of Father's Day, a day late, I'm live in the studio with my dad, Willie.
Hi, everyone. I'm Taylor's dad. Happy to be here.
How are you doing?
I think I'm doing pretty good. My first time on the radio, but nice. I'm very happy to be here on your show, Taylor. And I think it's neat that you have a show, and we'll just see where it takes us.
Uh-huh. You were my practice for doing the show. Years of political discussion.
Yes.
Getting slowly more calm in recent years.
No, I think you've just grown up and see it differently.
Oh, I see. No, I think we both maybe matured in our level of discourse a little, and now there's less yelling.
Right.
I remember yelling. Maybe it's because I was a teenager and we lived together, but that was what was happening for a while. So, yeah, we're just going to talk about all kinds of stuff today, mostly where we overlap, hopefully, because I feel like a lot of the time on this show I've spent talking about groups of people who think that they're more different politically than they actually are, and what we all actually have in common. So maybe we can focus on the positive and what we have in common.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with Taylor more on that, I come from a different place than she does right now, different generations, which is always the case. But I really think that 90% of us agree on 90% of the things. And if we could solve the framework, I guess, of everything, then we can work out the things we disagree on.
Exactly. That sounds good. So some of the just basic stuff I want to talk about. I think earlier today on the local news and again at 4:30, they played highlights of the governor's debate that happened last week that I also went to. And I know you're not really swept up in election stuff.
I can say that I probably shouldn't talk. I can't talk about it a lot because I'm not real informed on that. So,
yeah, I can't say that you missed that much, honestly. I mean, it was kind of a typical debate where a lot of it was for show and they were mostly just campaigning and not really answering a lot of tough questions. And the ones that they did answer.
Wow. I'm so surprised that it would be like that. I can't believe it.
It was shocking. But they really, in a bad way, agreed on most things. It was really, for me, displayed how much the Republicans and the Democrats are the same or really similar. But they have these small differences that they really accentuate to make it seem like they're more different than they are.
Right. And I think that's the shell game that they want us to be watching. And yeah, they are very much the same and part of the structure that needs to maybe come apart.
Mm-hmm. So there's also, this debate was between Rob McKenna, who's our current attorney general, and he's the Republican candidate for governor, and Jay Inslee, who's the chosen one for the Democrats without a primary. You know, he's a longtime congressman in the state, and now he's running for governor. And there's also 8 or 9 other candidates running for governor that weren't present at that debate and probably won't be invited to most of the debates. I think it's safe to say, because usually those candidates aren't invited, and they kind of run the gamut from more there's like four or five more Republicans other than McKenna. There's a socialist. There's someone running on, I think, the Constitution Party. There's a few other parties sprinkled throughout. But so I had a chance to ask Jay Inslee, who's the Democratic candidate, a question about that. And I just have a little clip, but I don't want to talk about this for too long because I don't think it's quite as important. So I'm going to see if this clip will play. Maybe not.
The question was, there's obviously a handful of other candidates from smaller parties in the governor race.
Uh-huh.
And what would you do if elected to work toward elections reform and work toward greater accessibility for third parties and independent candidates?
Well, to start with, I'll do anything possible to right the wrong of the Citizens United case, which really opened the floodgates of unlimited money and really was a distortion of democracy. So I'll look for ways to change that. I've been a supporter of a variety of campaign finance laws to try to reduce the influence of money in politics. Obviously, we all have to play under the abiding rules, But the approach I have is to try to reduce the influence of dollars in the political process.
Okay. And structural things like the top two primary, would you think about restructuring that to increase the accessibility during campaigns?
I guess, you know, the voters have spoken on this. I'm not proposing any changes in that regard.
So that was Jay Inslee talking at the governor's debate last week about his views on third party. I liked what he said about Citizens United. That made me glad, because obviously I think that's a horrible decision too. And both candidates for attorney general told me that they would be willing to seek action overturning Citizens United, you know, the Supreme Court decision that corporations have equal rights as humans, speech wise, and that money is speech. So I don't know. I still wasn't very, what do you think?
I like that you actually kind of pinned him to answer the question at the very end, and he did actually answer the question. So I guess, even though I know nothing about the race really, to his credit, at the end he actually said yes or no, which his answer was no, but he answered a question. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Inslee, for answering a question. I would have also talked to Rob McKenna about that, but he immediately following the debate was nowhere to be found, and some friends of mine who were outside kind of waiting for candidates to leave saw him, quote, slink through the back door like a weasel into his car. That's not my quote. That's a witness on the street. But so I didn't get a chance to ask Mr. McKenna any questions. I'm not just only playing Inslee's quote because I like him better. I don't really like either of them very much. So.
Totally bad. I can't say where Mr. McKenna was going, but you brought up a political joke that popped into my head a couple years ago. It was more timely then, but you remember when the big Larry Craig scandal was going on.
I do indeed.
You know, Footloose. Anyway, one night my wife and I went out downtown to the Satellite, and then we went over next door, which is
to Irv's,
yeah. And there were a lot of great, we just like to do that because the entertainment is great. Mostly it was karaoke night, and up there, couldn't believe it, it was right after the Larry Craig scandal broke. Who's up there singing? Cross-dress, but it's definitely Larry Craig. I just seen his picture in the paper that morning. It was him. He's standing up there, and guess what he was singing? Knock three times on the ceiling if you...
Wonderful.
And weird, nuts at the end. Next person up there, cross-dressing also. I think it was him. I'm pretty sure it was Dick Cheney. And he rolled out the best version of, "Oh, Blackwater, keep on rolling."
Oh, see, the comedy runs in the family, and the political, some of it runs in the family. Yeah, it's all here. So what do you think in general? So you said you're not really paying attention to the elections. Is it because you're busy, or is it because you're disinterested, or?
I would say 90% busy, 10% apathetic. And I hate to say that. Well, I was at the first Tea Party rally in Spokane.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I'm a member of the Tea Party. I don't have a card or anything. I get some emails from them. I rarely and sometimes read them. And I think that is something that is misunderstood by maybe your generation, your listener base.
Mm-hmm. How so? Just the way it gets, I mean, so that's kind of a bad word in a lot of the circles I run in is Tea Party. You know, it's
right.
It can be kind of used as this.
Well, you know, I'm just, I see myself as just an everyday guy. I don't really have a dog in the race, you know what I mean? And the reason I went to the first Tea Party rally is probably fiscal. And I really think that was the original grassroots base of the Tea Party, was fiscally related issues. Are there other groups within that group, just like groups on the left? There's, you know, there's factions within factions on any given issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's just like, I mean, the way that the Tea Party ended up getting covered was the racist sentiments and the just kind of like the nutty fringe was really mm-hmm. highlighted. And I think it's the same with Occupy, where you saw that picture over and over again of the guy, you mm-hmm. know, defecating on a police car. That's the picture you get. And with
right.
the Tea Party, you kind of get this same, like, ignorant.
Well, and I think you get, if you pay attention, if there even is a mainstream media anymore, if you pay attention to them, you're just going to get either something coming from the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, you know, on the news. That's what you're getting. It's mm-hmm. all, you're seeing what people want you to see, and that is the most important thing, I would say, for the younger generation, is no matter what, use your mind. Use your mind. Look into something. Don't do what anybody tells you or what you think you're supposed to be doing. Just use your mind. If we all do that, that's the solution to the problems.
Mm-hmm. Word. That's all I can say to that is word, because it's true. So you were affiliated with the Tea Party, sort of, and kind of still are. What, and you said fiscal issues. Can you be more specific? Like what?
Well, at that time, that was the bailouts, you know, and
the first it's round. Like
it, right. The very first round, you know, that's the first Tea Party rally in Spokane. That's the only one I've been to was, I believe, on tax day. Was that
2009?
Yeah, 2009. Must have been 2009. Tax day 2009. And the bailouts had just happened. And it's like, wait a minute, you know, you're giving money to the banks because they had failed policies in bed with the government on a lot of things, in bed with Wall Street. I mean, you name it. And because they failed, you're going to just, oh, we're going to take care of you. And you know, I'm a very, very, very small businessman. Nobody's taking care of me. I'm not asking anybody to, but to see that, you know, it's like, okay, that's enough. I'm not an activist. I'm not anything like that. I'm just somebody going, what, that's enough. You know, and like I said, within the Tea Party, there are other groups and, you know, there's probably people who want to co-opt it just like, Occupy, mm-hmm. co-opted, you know, there's a lot of different things going on there.
Yep, definitely. And you see that with when there was the Tea Party surge in Congress in 2010. After that, it was kind of, I imagine, a slap in the face to people like you who are genuine independents, that all these people got elected who continued this kind of like Republican agenda of really like subsidizing Wall Street and ensuring ongoing corporate welfare while saying that the problem lies with, you know, things like Social Security and that are really a drop in the bucket comparatively.
Yeah, yes and no. I think there are some legitimate Tea Party candidates that are closer to what I think we should have as a representative government, is that you need someone left, right, whatever. Their character does matter. Their character does matter. If they say what they believe and they stick to what they say, you may not agree with it, but we need people represented us who do that.
Mm-hmm. You know? How can you tell if they're being honest, though?
I guess you can't till you get in. They get in there and you see what they do. Mm-hmm. And that's where if I was an activist, probably the number one thing I would push would be term limits.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, do term limits. If 30 years from now we go, hey, we got it under control, then maybe, you know, if, you know, amend the Constitution, go through the front door, not the back door, and change it.
Definitely. That's something that I talked about on here with John Waite, who is, you know, really into third party elections reform and stuff, is term limits, because there's no reason. A lot of people were really disappointed when State Senator Lisa Brown didn't run again. She mm-hmm. was in the middle of her campaign and then dropped out. And I think that she was doing a great job, but she was doing it for 20 years. And there's not really a reason in my mind with, 400 million people in the U.S., why a group of 600, you know, need to hold most of the political power for most of their lives.
Right. Yeah, it shouldn't be that way. It should be. And anyone who, I say it goes back to moral character, anybody who would look at the situation and is a good person would say, well, yeah, I want to serve. That's what it is. It's service. It's not getting in there for your own self-serving. It's serving the public. Get in there and serve and be understanding and go, I see why we need term limits right now. I'm going to do my best and set an example for the next guy. Okay, mm-hmm. You're in there. It's representatives. It's not kings and queens.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's frustrating to see locally, you know, politicians who campaign on term limits turning around and getting into office and then saying, well, maybe that wasn't such a good idea because I want to stay now.
That was before they went to the star chamber.
Exactly. That's another, yeah, we've got the sci-fi influence. So if we both start, you know, sounding a little conspiratorial or anything, it's all the sci-fi
yeah.
that we've consumed collectively. So I guess this goes back to what we were talking about with Tea Party stuff and you as a business owner. The big, I think the most used phrase in the governor's debate and the most used phrase in all campaigns this year and the last couple of years has been job creation. This mythical concept of, you know, job creation is what we need. We obviously do need jobs. Something I've never been able to wrap my head around is how there's obviously a vast amount of work to be done in our country, like infrastructure wise, energy wise. You know, if we have to move off of fossil fuels, there's a ton of work to be done there. Our infrastructure is crumbling. There's work to be done there. And it's frustrating to see all of this stuff that needs to get done and all these unemployed people. And I don't understand why it's so hard to just put the two together and get it done. So what do you think is, do you think it's the government's job to create jobs? Whose job is it?
And this probably sounds like a cliche to some people, but, you know, if there's no incentive, I could expand my business right now. But when I do, it seems like the costs just catch up with the expansion and it's all risk and, you know, it could be reward, but again, part of that is myself personally, is that I just like being a very small business person and having the independence, even though that means, you know, a lot of responsibilities too, that affords, and I don't want to expand. But if I did want to, the business would be there, but I don't know if there's a real reward or carrot out there right now for even doing that for most businesses.
Mm-hmm. So
between taxes and uncertainty, you know, that makes it hard.
So then if the small businesses can't, you know, in many cases take on that liability of creating more jobs, and this myth about large corporations being job creators, I think is pretty transparently false. And the jobs that they do create are either manufacturing ones that get shipped to China and India, where the labor's cheaper, or they're things like call centers and like customer service and retail. And those are the fastest growing jobs in the US. And that's what the corporate sector is going to give us. And
well, I really believe that right now things are being directed in a way on purpose to create that situation where it is impossible for independent and private businesses to grow, because we have a government that wants to be the growth.
Mm-hmm.
And they are facilitating that, and they're impeding people who, in the small businesses, they're doing that while they're saying the opposite, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think that's where the dialogue splits between, and we've talked about this before because we talk about this all the time, but the dialogue splits between your people, my obnoxious air quotes that no one can see, and my people, you know, like Tea Party, Occupy, is you tend to characterize the problem as being the huge government, and we tend to characterize the problem as being the huge corporations.
Which are the same thing.
Exactly, yeah. So that's where we finally come to, and it's really nice that we are speaking the same language now. But
so if both of those groups pulled back the curtains,
yeah,
and met on the things they agreed on, maybe we could have real hope and real change.
I like the watching the needle when you said real like that. It was a nice little slide anyway. But yeah, that's a good point. So why do you think that doesn't happen more? Do people just not talk to each other like
because
this?
I think the people who don't want that to happen work really hard at it. And, global warming, I think we talked about that a little bit. I don't know whether or not the globe is warming. If it is, do I think we need to do something about it? But the global warming movement, I think, had direction behind it that was less than, you know, purely people who wanted to save the earth. And I think that some of that is coming out now. I mean, if there's a problem, yeah. But when it gets hijacked and used for political purposes, it doesn't get anybody anywhere.
Mm-hmm. That's my frustration too, is I personally believe that science points to the fact that yes, something drastic is going on, but for the solution to be like cap and trade or some miraculous mm-hmm. solution coming from the government that's just a further subsidy of big corporations isn't really what I'm looking for, you know. And
yeah, it's kind of a catch-22 that big government, you know, you say, well, we need a solution, okay, that if there was a global warming problem, do we have technology and everything to maybe do something about it? Who knows? I mean, that's definitely not proven. But if there was, how would that be achieved? By some benevolent, huge organization like a government to say, okay, here's how the problem can really be solved. We're going to facilitate it. We're going to solve it. End of story. But when the huge government is the problem and only focused on its own greed and power, then how can you say that's the solution? So that's therein lies the catch-22.
Yeah, it's frustrating because we do, in my opinion, we do have the technology to move off of fossil fuels. If you look at an example like Germany, you know, a really industrial country that's almost entirely solar, that's doable. And during the governor's debate, Jay Inslee was talking about one of his big things is wanting to subsidize to really encourage aviation biofuel and solar cell production. And he wants manufacturing in Washington. He wants us to be a tech center for the world, which I think is a great vision. But it's frustrating to see how that gets carried out with instances like, I mean, Obama talked so much about that. And that was part of the reason I was so wooed at the very beginning by him, is if he had actually done some of the green jobs, energy stuff he said, you know, we're going to put people back to work, creating government jobs, developing solar and developing wind and stuff like that. If that had happened in a more real way, other than whatever that famous scandal is with him giving the millions of dollars to that company who ended up not doing anything.
Yeah. Which one?
Yeah. But I mean, I think either party would have done that because that's just the way.
Right. It might have been in a different way, you know, red or blue or whatever, but kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Coke or Pepsi. But yeah. So, but I think you're right that if there was a good government, I think in an ideal world, that is the role of the government, is to represent individual people and say, this is a problem we need to tackle. Let's do it in a way that actually works, rather than let's do it in a way that's going to continue the existence of our power structure.
Right.
So,
yeah. And the energy problem really is very complicated because you get into geopolitical things and military, you know, the whole thing, because, and you know, that's where we might disagree some on, you know, world politics and how that all plays. And the Middle East, and are we friends to countries, enemies to countries? Should we be involved in places? That all plays a part in the oil thing. So very complex.
It is. Yeah, that's a whole nother can of worms. But if you're just joining us, you're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane. The show is Praxis. My name's Taylor, and I am on with my father. We're just past Father's Day, and we're just talking about all kinds of stuff. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us live in the studio, 509-747-3807. We will gladly take your calls. So all of this is going on. I haven't lived with you for 5 years, I guess.
Wow.
I know. Time flies when you're super busy.
She hasn't even used her get to come back home once card.
I haven't, but it is there still. I'm waiting until I really, really need it. And then I'm going to just lay it on the table. But so when I lived with you, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I remember some Fox News being on the telly. I remember Glenn Beck and stuff like that. Where are you right now with news sources that you trust? I know you're not watching Fox at all anymore.
No. I mean, I think I watched Fox News when I woke up Sunday morning, because that's where I fell asleep with my finger on the remote. I fell back asleep and I woke up and it was on, but it was just general news coverage. But no, I don't. I do. Don't hate me, but no, I do subscribe to Glenn Beck, which is all on the internet now. I do get some information there that I don't get anywhere else. And sometimes it's interesting. I don't necessarily agree with him there's things I definitely agree with him on, things I disagree with him on, but it's interesting. And he's very smart to go the direction he did. And you have to give him credit, because he just with the internet show, outrates almost all of the cable news channels during his time slot.
Yeah. And I definitely, that bought him some points for me. I still definitely don't agree with him on almost anything. And he frustrates me a lot because he gets really close to what I consider the truth, but then he mixes in all this weird stuff that just doesn't make any sense, and it's not very coherent, and I think sometimes it's dangerous. Some of the historical perspective he introduces, it's really selective, and obviously anyone who's telling a story is going to be selective about the details, but I just really dislike the way that he does it. But for him to be independent now, I think independent media is the only...
Right, and to his credit, I think that he would say that's okay to disagree with me.
I hope so.
If we can have a discussion on it, you know, and I think, contrary to probably what gets reported at times, that he believes in peaceful solutions, and that's probably one of the things I give him credit for. And I know people are going, what? That's not true. That's not true. But I really think it is, and I think that is a key that where Taylor and I say that we agree on most everything, you mm-hmm. know. There's 10% we don't, but the main thing is that as Americans, as real Americans, and what we want Americans to be is that we don't fight it out with our fists. If someone disagrees with us, then we present our argument and they present theirs. Maybe we learn something. That's why I say use your own mind and your own judgment, don't be directed by anyone.
Mm-hmm. No groupthink.
Right.
Yeah. So what was I going to ask you?
Which brings us to...
What does that bring us to?
It's
up to you.
We were talking about this morning. You said that some of your listenership might go, what? But... Ayn Rand, objectivism.
Uh-huh.
Ayn
Rand. We don't mention that name.
I know. Like I said, I think at the time when she wrote... which that's probably what brought me into political thinking was reading Atlas Shrugged about, when you were just a wee tot.
Mm-hmm.
And where I agree with her on a lot of objectivist philosophy. I don't agree with her on some things, but at the time she wrote those books, her philosophy was very much a check and balance against socialism and communism, but big government and stuff.
I see that book being more about it. So, okay. I just want to explain to you and to the general listening audience that I also, you know, as a teenager, read a bunch of Ayn Rand and really, really liked it. And then I came into working in the world of more like left-leaning, whatever type of people. And it's just like you don't even mention her name. People freak out. And a lot of the times it's kind of just this vague notion of like, it's bad. It's all about selfishness and greed and capitalism. And in some ways it is all about selfishness and greed and capitalism. Mm-hmm. But most of those people, I would wager, haven't actually read it, because what it's really about, especially Atlas Shrugged, I think, is anti-state subsidized capitalism. Because it's not really socialism what's going on in that book. It's really that the government is buddying up with the companies who aren't the best to do the job,
well,
like we have now, you know.
And well, her first book was We the Living, which is kind of autobiographical. She grew up in communist Russia and mm-hmm. escaped there to the United States, and it was the most wonderful thing in the world to her. And it's more about independence, the individual is what it's about, which is where I would agree with her strongly. And I think we all as individuals are the solution, and groups and
governments and
political action groups and all that, and I belong to this and I belong to that. That's all good, and that's people that you agree with on certain things, but we're all individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And I still believe that, you know, if someone works hard at something, they deserve the credit of what they do. I believe that most people, the government providing a safety net is not a good long-term policy with the government that we have now, that all of us should try to support ourselves and help others first go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to make an argument to your safety net
long-winded
thing. Because I think that it would be really irresponsible to not have a safety net now when we have a system that puts, 50% of people in near or total poverty. You know, and it's not that there's just 50% of people are lazy, you know, it's that there really isn't opportunity.
Oh, I agree. But I think that's because there are policies in place from the multi-government corporation that want us under control, and that's where they want us, and that's why it is that way. If you had a true, with true capitalism, what we have isn't capitalism, so don't use what you think is capitalism, is what I was talking about, and a system where people can flourish, you know, which we really haven't had since the late 19th century.
If even then, really, yeah, I
if
mean,
even then, but if you have that, you know, people should try to take care of themselves first. You know, I believe in self-reliance. I'm a huge believer in that. Of course, if there's people who can't take care of themselves, you know, but
we
what I'm
out.
Saying, if where I think this country is going is we need to do that. The government, you may not have a government safety net. Learn how to do for yourself. Learn how to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
See, and that's back to Glenn. That's where I agree with him, is he says that's the solution. I don't disagree with that.
And neither do I. And that's also what a lot of these kind of, where the sustainability people, like whole systems type of people that, you know, Ryan and I are involved with, mm-hmm. would really dovetail too. Like, for instance, West Central in Spokane, it's the poorest neighborhood in the state, I think.
Wow.
I may be wrong, but I think it is. And they just had a... let's see, neighborhood resiliency convergence. And it was all about, let's all get together and learn how to do stuff. Let's learn how to cook healthy for cheap, you know, learn how to grow your own food, learn how to do home repairs, learn how to, you know, do rainwater capture and all of this stuff.
Right. And things like, I couldn't agree more with transporting thing. What makes more sense, to use the natural resources you have right there, or to make it in China and ship it across the country? You know, which supports nothing good, really. What makes more sense? You know, learn to do for yourself and use what you have around you first. You know, I'm not saying shut down all imports and exports, but just we need to become more independent. And that is the solution and really the hope we have.
Mm-hmm. I also think independent and realize that we're interdependent. You know, it can't be, that's where I break with a lot of people who really take that like Ayn Rand objectivism to heart and they take the wrong parts of it. I've met a lot of people like that who what they got out of those books was, I'm an island and I don't need anyone and I can do whatever I want and stomp around, and if I say I'm right, I'm right, and I don't have to listen to anyone. And these are the kinds of people who should not be given books like that, you know. I mean, obviously freedom of information, but there's also a group of people who will misinterpret anything to mean stuff like that. And I don't remember where I was going with that, but I fully agree with you that it's up to individuals and groups of people, you know, realizing that they do depend on each other, and that, you know, if some of the natural resources are in China, you know, but mm-hmm. we have the means to produce them, yeah, we should work together. But the way we have it now is just like, it's like a global drain. It's like an effort to drain everything good out of every part of the world to create mediocre products for a small percentage of the population to only consume, you know?
Right.
And some of that is, I mean, am I glad that we have the internet and I'm glad that we have iPhones and stuff and all this ability to communicate? Yes.
Right. And that's where things get a little bit gray with, I guess, anti-corporatism, is a lot of the people who are shouting down the corporations are doing it on an Apple device. You know, Apple's a corporation too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're picking and choosing your corporations based on, once again, political parties or something, my opinion, you're just not going the right direction. Do your homework. What you buy or what you not is kind of using your vote. I'm not saying that.
Oh, it totally
is. I'm just saying, don't be hypocritical.
Mm-hmm. Well, and with the country we have now, your main role, it's even like presented in school this way in a lot of ways, is your role is a consumer, you know. Mm-hmm. You are a consumer above all things, and that's why politics is presented the way it is, like a brand, you know, like, ooh, do you want brand A or brand B? This one has crunchy bits, this one, you know, is chewy, or whatever the differences are. But I think that's where it gets complicated. But
I think somewhere far below the White House, Mr. Burns from The Simpsons is sitting there watching the Dirty Yeti in Peaceful Valley going, damn you kids, consume. Oh, did I say?
No, you can say damn.
Yeah, I wrote Taylor, I wrote before I came in here today, I wrote down the 7 words you're not supposed to say on the radio on my hand so I wouldn't forget. So I'm going to read them off to you, okay?
No, hey, he won't do that in here. We used to have a sign up in the studio with the words you can't say, but they're not here anymore. So don't worry. Don't worry, FCC. We won't. It's Monty Python on KYRS. So you're listening to KYRS. The show is Praxis. My name's Taylor. I'm having a Father's Day special with my dad talking politics.
Shout out to the Moran Prairie.
The Moran Prairie MPG. But we were talking about energy and we were talking about China, and that brings up something really topical in Spokane. Are you familiar with what's going on with the coal trains?
Just a little bit that I heard about yesterday, but tell me and then.
So basically there's a proposal right now to bring 50 to 70 a day, that's the estimate, trains mm-hmm. of coal coming from the strip mines in Canada and the Midwest through Spokane to different West Coast ports. So, in Washington, Oregon, and California. And there's been studies done in all of those port cities on what the effect of these trains would be environmentally. And environmental impact takes into account, human health mm-hmm. and like air quality, water quality, and stuff like that. But there hasn't been a study for Spokane. Mm-hmm. Even though we're going to get 5 times as many trains as each of those individual ports. So tonight is the city council resolution. They're going to have a vote. Basically,
where is the coal going?
To China and India. It's going to be exported. So even though in Washington state, the governor signed something basically declaring that as a state, we have the intention to get off of coal because it's mm-hmm. the most polluting, one of the least efficient forms of energy that we have, and it's really destructive to extract, right? So as we're doing that, we're also supporting shipping it somewhere else. So it's still being extracted. It's still polluting where we live.
So I have a question. Is the pollution that Spokane would receive from it, is it from the trains, the pollution from the trains, or is it from it the fact that what they're actually hauling is coal?
It's a combination of the two, but it's mostly that it's... So these are uncovered freight cars filled with coal and coal dust. Mm-hmm. So as you'd imagine in the wind, the dust is blowing off.
Right.
And there's been studies done by,
The fact that it is coal they're hauling is an additional factor in addition mm-hmm. to those 50 to 70 trains. I'm just being devil's advocate. Would those trains be coming through anyway?
No, probably not to the extent. I mean, more people, there is a lot more freight traffic. Like living downtown, I notice, our train traffic has probably doubled or tripled in the last few years because it's more cost effective than using trucks, mm-hmm. and I think trains are great. I think we never should have stopped using trains to the extent that we did because they're so much more efficient than using highways. And I like traveling by train mm-hmm. and I could talk for a long time about trains because I really like them, but
there you go back to being Dagny Taggart and Atlas Shrugged.
Exactly. So it all comes back secretly to Ayn Rand, but, so it's mostly the fact that it's coal. And so tonight is the city council vote at 6. They have a resolution up to basically say as a city council, we request that they do an environmental impact study because that's the hardest thing we can ask for. Unfortunately, with the structure we have, we can't just say, no, we don't want them. Mm-hmm. We have to say, well, we need you to find a reason that we can legally say we don't want them.
So this is kind of a sidebar on that and just a thought that it seems to me like the news crews, because I live up on where a lot of the news stations are on top of the hill, mm-hmm. seems like they're always out looking for something to cover. Is something like that accessible for somebody to go and call other media and say, hey, this is happening, or locally our local media's, do they have a tied-in agenda or what I'm saying?
That's an interesting question, and I don't really know. That's what I like about doing community media. But so the Sierra Club's taken this on as a campaign. There's an independent group that's called, No Coal Trains or Beyond Coal. That's Beyond Coal is the Sierra Club campaign. So they're doing a bunch of work, and I'm sure I would imagine they'd be sending out press releases and stuff. It's just a matter of will those stations pick it up? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess the way I see it and my assumption, which may be wrong, is that stuff like this isn't very sexy,
Yeah.
It's not, but it's at the same time, it's also something that would affect a lot of people. So I would hope they'd be covering it.
Well, I think that's in how you present it, too. I mean, Spokane is a great city, in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of most people who live here. But we're not quite, you know, we don't have a major league team or anything like that. So in a way, I think if that was me presenting, I'd say, you know, why is Spokane? That's the angle that people here would pick up on. Why is Spokane, you know, and not, besides the fact that maybe it shouldn't be happening in the first place. But if, you know, that seems like that would interest people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Why Spokane? I mean, we're obviously a huge, trains are a huge part of our history and a huge part of the reason we're a city at all. You know, it basically comes down to the right. river, which spawned having all the rail yards and stuff. And we're a huge through point for trains. But I don't know. I mean, it's just really frustrating that
would be. Let's make them go through Ione on the old Washington and Idaho navigation road.
There you go. I've been on that road. It looks scary, but it'd be a better place for all that coal, maybe. But
or not at all.
Yeah, exactly.
If you take away all their routes.
I'd prefer not at all. But so yeah, that's coming up, and it's frustrating because all of the arguments I've heard that are pro these trains are these kind of really strange arguments on, you know, it's creating jobs, that somehow it's beneficial to us just because it's commerce. Even though it's really negative, destructive commerce that we're doing with China to the environmental degradation of our own resources.
Right. And that's where I would object to it, is that it's going to China to support, you know, some of the other things that I don't support as far as the coal or not. I'm not as informed enough on that as I should be to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's just frustrating that people are suckered in by that argument, because it's kind of the big thing right now, is you can't disparage anything that might be creating jobs, because that's our top priority. And I think it has to be a more critical evaluation of what type of jobs that we want. Do we want everyone to be coal miners again? You know, is that really the economy we want to go back to? No, in my opinion.
Right. And I think that, I mean, coal, call it Energy X, whatever it is, it's a resource that we have, and to sell it to someone who is at odds against us in a multitude of ways, really, another country, I'm not going to say an enemy country, but at odds against us, just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it makes sense to have.
And to use that Energy X here would bring the cost of energy down, no doubt. And that would create jobs.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. You know, I don't know. It's frustrating for me to have to deal with having countries at all. You know what I mean? Having to have that be an issue.
You're just young and idealistic. You haven't been beat down yet.
Oh, no.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I've been told that a lot. You're the first person to say that you're kidding. So thank you.
Because I know you're like me and you won't be beat down.
Oh, thank you. But so what was I going to ask you? So I guess since we have about 10 minutes, what would your ideal type of government look like, type of society look like? Since we're sci-fi buffs, we're allowed to do that. That's the awesome thing about sci-fi.
Wow. What would my ideal look like?
Sorry, that kind of puts you on the spot.
Yeah, it does. It's hard for me to bend my mind around it, because I've been thinking about practical things, which are only lead to ideals over a very long period of time. Mm-hmm.
Well, you could start there. You know, what are the basic practical
things? Guess to me is something that allows, you know, maximum freedom. I mean, I know that sounds like a cliche or whatever, but maximum freedom for the individual. Where government plays a role of providing safety to individuals, safety from each other. Don't need to protect us from ourselves as much as they want to, but safety from each other and other countries. Yes, I know that's where I would probably disagree with, like, or Ron Paul on some level, but not to the extreme of most of the people who disagree with him.
Mm-hmm.
But still, there are practical things. So you asked me, I'm not answering your question about an ideal very well, because I think that where you have great ideals. However, like with energy, there's a practical, and I know that there's a big backlash when I say that. There's a practical use for oil right now, in my opinion, even if the sci-fi solution that is very possible is out there. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're behind the eight ball, and to use what we have and work towards that, great, but we can't slit our throat right now, because then there won't be anything to work towards, you mm-hmm. know? So someone that realized that it's a balance, I guess in leadership, leadership is what we need, real leadership. Whether if we had real leaders who believed what they believed and weren't just selling out to the most powerful or greedy people or whatever, that's my ideal, is true leaders who believe in something.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also think people, citizens, you know, if we're going to have this participatory democracy, who are actually interested in participating and having using some discernment, having any discernment at all about what leadership means. And if we're going to be led, caring about it, you know, I mean, that's the reality of what we have. And so many people just buy into the kind of given paradigm of here's your two options and there's a difference between them, we promise, even though the differences are negligible when you zoom out far enough. So that would be my goal, is get people to stop playing the mm-hmm. all the games, stop playing all the games, but mostly the political game, the red and blue.
And for me, people thing. Who are self-reliant, have a culture, world of people who strive to be self-reliant, you know. It's like, you know, when you're living at home, yeah, and you're 18, I'm 18, I should be an adult. No, but rights come with responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And if everybody could live that and be kind to each other, everything else would fall into place.
Mm-hmm. I think including...
There's your ideal.
There you go. Yeah. Hey, that sounds good to me. I think we can all agree on that, hopefully. And I think that needs to extend to, you know, the mythical job creators, the kind of corporate elite, the global elite, you know, also has to mm-hmm. take responsibility for the decisions they make, which... It never seems to really happen. There's a lot of talk about holding politicians accountable, but I've never seen it happen. I don't know if you've ever seen it happen in your lifetime.
I don't know. I don't have very much experience with politicians or in politics directly.
Mm-hmm. I guess...
At estate sales at 6 a.m. when everyone's standing around, there's some good conversations, though.
Yeah, about stuff like this?
Oh, yeah.
I should go with you more often. I'll have to become a morning person.
Shout out to Conspiracy Bob. I know you're out there.
Hi, Conspiracy Bob. You can come on my show sometime. That would be interesting. Yeah. That would be crazy. Do you think he would do it?
I think it would be crazy.
Could I call him Conspiracy Bob on the air?
Maybe. If you tell him you're down with Alex Jones, then you can.
I'm not, but that's another story for another day.
Okay.
He falls into the Glenn Beck category for me of... A little bit too much selective fact use mm-hmm. and too much sensationalism, I guess. But they're both so frustrating to me, because I'm always like, oh, you're so close. I almost agree with you. And then they throw in the crazy. They put a big dash of crazy and I just don't, it doesn't jive with me. But yeah. So what was I going to tell you? It was about... Ideal structures. So you think we need to start with just getting good people in?
Mm-hmm. Term limits, good people who understand the reasons behind term limits, that look at this. We send what, and sometimes I think good people do go in, but you know, you get muddy when you crawl through the mud,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's, it just seems to be, that's what happens every time almost, that, oh, look at this person, and look, oh, I was for term limits, now I'm against it because I think I'm the solution to helping, and I think it's not about you, it's about going and representing to the best of your ability, getting out, handing off to the next guy. It's like if Taylor and I were in there, I think, you know, we would probably do better representing people than most,
mm-hmm.
because maybe we care and maybe we wouldn't be self-serving. I would hope.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know about you, but I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Yeah, I have no interest in being involved because of the culture.
I think the best people aren't necessarily drawn to politics.
Mm-hmm. That's the unfortunate part. But so we get the good people. Do you think, so for me, that sounds like a long, gradual process of getting enough people in who... you know, believe in elections reform and mm-hmm. basic stuff like that. That sounds to me like a lengthy process, especially with the political atmosphere we have right now. So,
yeah, and election reform. I mean, look at the technology we have. Couldn't somebody come up with a way that each one person could have their name on the rolls and vote? And it seems like it would be so simple from, you know, 250 years ago or whatever, 200 years ago. It seems like we have systems for tracking things like that. Elections should be easier.
Mm-hmm. We can read people's mind with who they really want to vote for and scan that in. No, mm-hmm.
right.
not really. But yeah, I
why don't we just all
totally
tell them then who they want to vote for, and then it'll be
there
simple.
You go.
Yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just close the loop. Close mm-hmm. systems. That's a bad example of a closed system. But I think that the only thing that scares me about that, about digital type election stuff, is that it's so easy to manipulate. Mm-hmm. I mean, paper. At the end of the day, a
yeah,
paper ballot
true.
Is a paper ballot, and
that's
it's a
true.
Concrete record of what the person said in the booth.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. But I think we're going the opposite direction of where we need to be going with even flawed ballot access now, you know, with the stuff going on in the South and some of the Midwest. Do you know about that? The enhanced, like, ID requirements for voting?
No.
There were multiple states that were trying to pass legislation that basically made even more stringent guidelines on being able to even register to vote. And a lot of them had to do with having different types of ID and things like that, which kind of disproportionately affect certain groups of people. And we have a call right now, so I'm going to take it. I think that I can take it. Answering the phone. So let's see if I can do this. This is my first on air. So... caller, can you hear me? Hello?
Caller?
Caller, you're on the air.
Maybe.
Can you hear us?
Maybe. Call back if we hung you up.
Now can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hello, caller, you're on the air. Praxis.
I can hear you.
We can hear you too. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I want to know if people are going to vote for the best candidate or the least of the two evils this year.
I will personally, I'll do my quick answer, which is I would vote for the best, and if there is no best on the ballot, then I will vote for no one.
And same here. I will I know there's people that say you should vote for the lesser of two evils or whatever, but I just morally don't bring myself to do that.
Okay, thank you.
What do you think?
I'm unclear on the issue. I'm still deciding.
Yeah. What do you think the benefits are of each, I suppose?
Well, kind of cut loss. You don't want the economy to get worse, but you do want some improvement also.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to trust, you know, any of them, really.
Yes.
But you have to make that decision on your own, ultimately.
Yes, I agree with you very much.
Mm-hmm. Keep reading. Keep doing your research.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great day. Sweet. Successfully taking calls since
right.
today. That brings up a good point, too. I know we talked about this. And so are you going to vote at all?
Am I going to vote? I think I will vote on I will vote on things that I'm informed on. I won't vote on things I'm not informed on. And if you want the insight on the presidential election, I don't think I will vote for either of the two candidates who are being most prominently presented.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it. I think I'll, because they're not the top, they're always referred to as the top candidates, but they're definitely the ones that are being promoted and the ones who have the money to
right.
get there.
And I don't know all the ins and outs, but the fact that it's not only the top two, that all along we pretty much almost knew who the two were going to be about 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
On the Republican side, maybe there was some doubt a little bit, but he's next in line, so go for it.
Mm-hmm. He's done enough shoe shining and stuff on his way up the totem
yeah.
pole.
You know, and he may or may not. I think he's a better candidate than John McCain. I think Romney is.
Ooh, what an accomplishment there.
And I think he's a better candidate right? than Obama, but myself, I'm not inspired to vote for either.
Yeah, I would thoroughly agree. But it's just so funny to me. I think I'm hoping that it becomes transparent to more people that it's kind of a joke. Like, I think Ron Paul, that was the biggest favor that he did anyone this campaign season, was he relentlessly just, you know, spoke his truth and was more or less ignored for a long time. And if he wasn't outright ignored, they kind of gave him his 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of condescending a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. They were like, okay, Grandpa, you can talk for a little while. And wasn't that sweet? But we're not actually going to address any of the things he's talking about because it's not in the teleprompter, you know?
Right. And yeah, I can see that. I think that, and I know the Ron Paul people may get after me, but sometimes Ron Paul doesn't do himself any favors in the way he presents himself. I guess I'm just speaking from a technical aspect. I think that, you know, I guess he's not very, he doesn't have a political look.
Yeah, I guess.
But, I agree with him on most things. And a third party candidate like that is very dangerous to the other two parties, and they will do everything they can to disallow it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one thing they can agree on, is that we need to keep being the only people in the conversation. Mm-hmm. So, yep, it's frustrating, but true. So you think, I guess I'm just summarizing, but your big thing is individual people using their own minds. Yeah.
And I know we only have a couple minutes, Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say something today that I'm very proud of you for growing up and losing your own mind. And
I lost my mind.
I can't say much more. I'm getting emotional.
Oh,
and
he's faked. That's
the one thing I've learned from Glenn Beck.
And here, yeah, indeed. And I like your Freudian slip there, that I was losing my own mind. I think you meant using.
No, I meant losing.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense too, for anyone who knows.
It's not losing it, it's expanding it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I'm glad that we've been able to talk more. And I know that, so your dad, mm-hmm. back on the Father's Day topic, your dad, when you were growing up, was very conservative, right? In the traditional sense of the word.
In the traditional sense of the word, but very apolitical, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
He read U.S. News and World Report.
But he was strict, you know, kind of into the socially conservative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's swung way back left, where he's probably nearly.
I guess so.
It's just interesting. It's been interesting for me, even over my life, to watch his shift.
Just as I was watching Fox News, though, I think he was watching some other stuff, and my younger sister was living in the house, and kind of the information he had available was coming from a different direction.
Mm-hmm. So maybe it was a similar
thing.
But now, I mean, the last conversation we all three had together was really good. Mm-hmm. And I think we all kind of agree. And my grandpa's been radicalized. So,
right.
And now you a little bit too. So mm-hmm. it's working. That's the good news.
We're the 90%ers, meaning that we agree on 90% of the issues, not that we're less poor than other people or more poor, but we agree on 90% of the issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are the 90-ish percent. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you could classify it, but I think that's true. And I think that's a powerful message to get out. And I'm glad we got to talk about it.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Taylor and KYRS.
Thank you for coming on with me and, doing a good job as a father and all of that. I hope that everyone had a good weekend.
Word.
Hopefully got to hang out with their fathers. Yay for individual fathers. Boo patriarchy. That's my Father's Day message. But, sorry, just getting stuff queued up. Do you have any last words?
No, I think I already spoke all of them, but thanks again. And let's all remember to treat each other nicely and focus on the things we agree on.
Exactly. Perfect message to end on. And I hope all of you have a great day. Thanks for listening. This has been Praxis on KYRS Thin Air Community Radio.